Welcome to the Listen to Ernest Speaking Basketball Show. I'm your host, Ernest E.J. Christian. Of course, today we are joined by our good friend, Matt Damien. He's the host, of course, of the Still Love This Game podcast. One of my favorite podcasts right now to listen to, basketball-centric, very diverse topics. Of course, on Twitter, at Malfunction Matt. That's Matt with two T's, by the way. Matt, what's up?
I can't believe you directed it to the Twitter account. I barely use that thing.
Do you really barely use that? And yet you have more followers than I do.
Yeah, back in the day I used to use it a lot, but I'm over Twitter.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Yeah. I respect your candor, and I tend to agree to some degree with Twitter. It is a bit overwhelming and a bit too much at times. I actually love Facebook for the reasons that in terms of discussions, there's a lot more organized discussion on Facebook than Twitter. But I will say I tend to funnel out all the negative on Twitter, and I just kind of focus on the positives and stuff. Keep it to where I need to just keep it and spew out all the bullshit and all that. But at least Twitter added 280 characters now, which is good.
Yeah, you can get more than a sentence in.
Yeah, finally, you know, it's great. So I put a little paragraph in there real quickly, you know. But, you know, you are the host of court. Like, you've been on the show before. Well, you haven't been on this show, the basketball show. You've been on the regular podcast. On that podcast before the year started, season started, we're discussing your new podcast, new venture. I got to tell you, I really enjoy it. You were saying you started the show saying, oh, it's a once-a-week podcast and whatever. You're doing like two, three shows a week now.
Sometimes. It honestly, the topics will come to you. You know what I mean? Like, I probably should have done mine yesterday, but I knew that we were going to do one, so I thought I'll stick to what's just happened in the last couple of days. To your, like, we'll keep those topics fresh. But yeah, that one a week thing didn't work out too well, did it?
No, but the thing is though, too, like about your shows, I love is that it's a mixed bag of current events, what's going on now in the league presently, and then of course, you know what, you know, one of the things you love discussing on there, especially with your Facebook page and the Instagram page, is that you love to discuss yesteryear and just have like discussions about, you know, for example, you had one great one about Clyde Drexler a couple days ago, and
right.
And that was a very, very good discussion, because he gets forgotten now as we get past now 20 years, you know, into past his peak, of course. He gets a little bit forgotten now in terms of the best two guards ever played in the NBA. So it's a great platform you have now going. I love it a lot. I want to talk to you about some of the current events in the NBA, which is I got to tell you. Now I was sitting there thinking about this before we came on the show. Like, the NBA is in a good place. They're in a great place right now. In the fact that if you remember when Michael Jordan retired in '99. Well, the first time anyway. Look, yeah, I know you played 2001 with the Wizards, but I don't count that. You know, the '99 retirements was really the one that really stuck out to me. And there was a bit of a lull in the NBA for a couple of years. I mean, you still had Shaq, of course, but Shaq, you know, and you have Duncan, but you know, Duncan was not a personality. He just came in and did his job. There was no alphas really outside Shaq, maybe in that 2-3 year span. Kobe wasn't Kobe yet. And then we got LeBron, of course, and Wade, and Kobe became Kobe eventually. And the league picked back up again. Somehow I think now that when we get past LeBron in his prime and when he retires, whenever that would be, I think the NBA would be fine. I don't think, based on the talent pool we're seeing here right now, present and the future, I don't see a dip coming post-LeBron. I really don't.
It's a good question. There definitely is a balance, which is good to see,
mm-hmm.
And in both conferences. I've been very, very critical of the conference system over the last, 10, 15 years. It's just been a joke, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're really starting to see, like, a lot of teams finally emerge. And people talk about the 90s being the expansion era. We've had really the tanking era, where you've had more teams tanking than have been competitive. And now I think we're finally starting to see teams get good after all that tanking. You know, Minnesota, Philadelphia, New York, all these teams that were, oh, Milwaukee as well, that have been irrelevant for so long, finally come back up, and it's great to see, because as you said, like once Jordan retired in, you could say there was a lull as well in 94, not just 99,
right?
When Jordan went retired, I'm not sure when LeBron's going to call it quits, but when he does go, the game is in good hands. I do agree with you there. The game is in very good hands.
Yeah. I mean, you look at present players, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, you know, people, the guys that came after LeBron, you know, that will be in LeBron's shoes, they'll be in LeBron's shoes in about 5 years, you know. But even behind that, you have the guys, you know, of course, now we're seeing the influx now of Giannis, Porzingis possibly, you know, being a star. And now look at the guys in Philadelphia, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I mean, the NBA right now is in a very good place. And it's funny, when you talk about sports now, you know, today in America especially, you know, you look at the NFL and all their controversies and, you know, with the anthem and the CTEs and you know, and even the quality of play has been scrutinized left and right. You know, baseball is now a regional sport. You know, as much as I love baseball, it is only a regional sport, really, to be honest with you. The NHL has not really made an impact here really much since the last strike in 2006. The NBA, meanwhile, has just been consistent recently. And you know, say what you want with the NBA. They may be very progressive, but they're very consistent in what they do. And I think people are seeing that now. And what the and I have to give, and I know you've been critical of Adam Silver in the past, but I gotta give him credit. At least he knows. Like, okay, we talk about the playoffs and the possibility of realignment because of the unbalance, you know, West and the East. But at least he acknowledges it and at least discusses the idea of maybe changing that. You know, a lot of leagues don't do that. They wait till after the fact. They like to be reactive instead of proactive. Seems like the NBA is a little more proactive than usual. Like the All-Star game, I'm not necessarily a big fan of the whole, like, Team LeBron as Team Steph, you know, who has top vote getters to do the All-Star game. I'm not a big fan of that necessarily, but I like the fact, but I like the NBA's candor, and at least they are willing to try things first and see if this works or not. That's why I think the NBA ultimately will still outlast the other sports in this country.
Well, a couple of things there. I will disagree with you on baseball still being regional. I think over the last couple of years, it's become much more transcendent from the markets.
But you know why, right? But you know why? The teams are playing the World Series, too. It's helped.
But the baseball's been great in the playoffs.
Oh, no doubt. Oh, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest reason people want to talk about the NFL and, as you said, all the controversies surrounding it. The bottom line, the quality of play has been terrible the last 3 or 4 years. The league has gone from being, which was a traditional Sunday game, and, you know, obviously Monday night football as well, and they overextended themselves. Now you got Thursday night football, and they really tried to make it like a weekly sort of roster or schedule, and that really hurt the quality of play because teams were all over the place. Some teams had 3 or 4 days rest. Some teams had seven or eight days rest.
Let me ask you, are you anti-Thursday football? Because I am. I've been that way from day one. I've been anti-Thursday football. Are you anti-Thursday football? Because I'm anti that. From day one, I've hated it.
I'm sorry, you're
oh, no.
Breaking up.
No, I was asking, are you anti-Thursday night football? Because I have been from day one. Like, I hate it. I don't mind it Thanksgiving and then maybe an occasional game in December, but to have Thursday night football every single week, I think is ludicrous.
Yeah. I think opening night is fine.
Yep.
The Thursday night football. And as you said, Thanksgiving is traditional. That has to happen on Thursday night.
Yeah, beyond that,
you can't have it every single week because it loses its appeal. What difference is what special attraction is Thanksgiving football now? Considering every week is Thursday night football.
Exactly, and that's a point too. Also, like one of the things with the NFL has been so great for years that it's losing now is that the NFL has always been to me an event sport. Like when I know when I was a child growing up that Sundays were NFL days and that's it. And then you had the Monday night game. What's happened now is that because of the oversaturation, because once upon a time, Monday Night Football was a big deal. I mean, a huge deal. Like, the game of the week was Monday Night Football. And now, it's just one of those games that happen to be on the schedule now. Like, it doesn't have the event feel anymore. A lot of it, too, is the fact that it's on cable TV now as opposed to on ABC national TV. You know, But once upon a time, the NFL, you know, Monday Night Football used to be the game of the week. And when you oversaturate Sunday Night Football, you oversaturate Thursday Night Football and all this, it takes away the luster. I get the money grab and all that, but I always knew at some point there was a bubble to be bursted here, because there's only so much you can deal with. And for me, look, I'm not going to speak for everybody else. Not everybody's in the same shoes as I am, having a wife and two kids, okay? So I don't mind the break from football once in a while. I get people who don't have wife or kids who want football in their face all the time. But I think it's better to have the sport miss you. Like, it's good to miss the sport, so when you have the sport on Sunday, you appreciate it. It's hard for me not to appreciate football because it's always in my damn face.
Yeah, I think that's also playing in the NBA's advantage too, when you think Absolutely. About it, because last year was really bad. People will look at the ratings and all that. Yeah, the NBA. The competitiveness of the NBA was shocking last year. And now it's gone from being a two-team league to, as you mentioned, all the teams just in the East emerging. You mentioned something interesting about what the league's going to be like when LeBron leaves, in terms of it being in good hands. I can make the argument right now, that's not how I really believe, but I could make an argument if I wanted to, that LeBron's not even a top five player right now. Right now, you could say that, forget his numbers for a second, but you've got Westbrook, you've got Curry, you've got Durant, you've got Giannis, you've got Harden. There's five right there. I didn't even mention Porzingis.
I can see what you're selling. I mean, I would never believe that, but I see what the argument actually is, makes sense I'm a smart guy, so I can figure it out. But I'll never believe that, of course.
Oh yeah, I'm playing devil's advocate, but what I'm saying in terms of where the league stands in terms of competition, and the NBA has always sold itself on stars. There is plenty of star power there, so it's not going to be a situation that, as you mentioned, when LeBron retires, it's not going to be like when Jordan retired twice in the 90s, where it's going to be like, oh, there's a huge vacuum. It's not going to be like that.
No.
If anything, that space will be eaten up by those players of those other stars quite quickly.
Oh, no doubt. And the NBA, like I said, it's in a great place. Look at the Knicks. They're actually interesting now. The Knicks are interesting. Like, I'm actually watching Knicks.
He deserves a lot of credit for this. He's not going to get it, but Phil Jackson. He built that team.
He sort of did. Look. He made the Porzingis pick. That's the one thing that he did right, and that pretty much created everything else around him. But everything around that's been a disaster. I'm not gonna lie to you there. But the New York Knicks are very interesting to watch. Like, they're more interesting without Melo now. Like, to me, I came to the year saying to myself, okay, you know what? The Knicks are gonna be bad. It's fine. But let's see how Porzingis can carry a team. That was my goal. And not only is he carrying a team, he's actually winning games right now. Now, whether or not it sustains itself going forward is still the million-dollar question moving forward. But right now, through a month of basketball, the Knicks are fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no question about it. You won't have to twist my arm to watch them. There's no question.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Since you're the guest of the show today, are the Knicks right now, could you see the sustaining into the winter months and into spring? Are they a playoff team in the East?
Sure. I think they'll compete for it. I'm not sure they'll get past the first round, even if they get in there.
Right.
But when you mentioned Porzingis, he's only just going to keep getting better. There's some young talent on that team that will just continue to grow. I'm not sure how far they'll go with Hornacek as a coach. But it's not like I look at them and think, oh, it's not like the Spurs where you're like, oh, at some point they're going to wear down. They're on the other side of it. It's like they're just going to keep growing.
They're young enough. So they just don't care. The moment, they don't care. They're just going to play and play hard and move forward. I don't know. I agree. I'm not sure if Hornacek is the guy moving forward. I mean, he's the guy that's going to ultimately be there to take him over the hump in the years to come. But right now, I look at his team. I mean, it's not just Porzingis playing well for himself. He's lifting others' play now. So look at Tim Murray Jr. Out of nowhere, playing big-time ball now, like his daddy. You know what I'm saying? So
well, I wouldn't go that far.
You know what I mean. I mean, it's a small sample, obviously, but you know what I mean. Look, it's fun to watch. They're one of my favorite league pass teams to watch. I mean, my Premier League class team to watch, and I want to get to this right now, I couldn't hold off on this, is the Philadelphia 76ers. I mean, I know.
Oh, yeah, have done anything recently that you want to talk about?
I don't know if you want to, if you saw last night's game against the Lakers, but my God, Embiid, Joel Embiid. And it's funny because, like, as good as he's been the last 2 years, albeit 31 games last year he played, my focus has been Ben Simmons all year long. And I noticed Embiid, but my focus has been Ben Simmons, and rightfully so. Ben Simmons has been phenomenal this year. But, wow, last night Embiid, that is a welcome to the NBA, I'm a star performance last night against the Lakers.
Look, everyone's going to talk about what he did against the Lakers. I prefer what he did against the Clippers. I'm not sure if you saw that.
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was against DeAndre Jordan. He made him look ordinary, and DeAndre Jordan's still an incredible defender.
Yeah.
That really opened my eyes. I'd been keeping an eye on them. I watched both games against the Rockets. They should have won both games, by the way. But they just completely fell apart at home.
Yeah.
With that Eric Gordon shot and also that run that the entire Rockets went on. When I watched that team, they remind me of the hype around them and the emergence. They're like Shaq and Penny a little bit, young Shaq and Penny.
Yeah.
But their playing styles are very different. It's almost like Grant Hill, a young Grant Hill, with Ben Simmons being the young Grant Hill. And obviously Embiid's a lot more skilled at this point of his career than what Shaq was at his at that point. So I'm looking at this team and I'm thinking, if they stay together and if they stay healthy, of course, the things that plagued the Magic, who knows what their ceiling is? Who truly knows what their ceiling is?
And not only that,
that's incredible when you're right. About that. Maybe LeBron will join that team. Everyone's talking about him going to LA. Maybe he'll be.
Well, guess what?
I could have. Sorry.
Well, guess what, Matt? They'll have the cap room. They have the cap room next year. You think I'm joking? They got cap room next year, too.
They could go LeBron if he wanted to. Is it a pretty big market, but do you think he would go to Philly?
No, I don't think so. I'm just talking hypotheticals here. Like, money wise, could fully afford it. They don't need to get rid of anybody. They can keep this team intact right now and still afford LeBron.
What are they going to do with Okafor?
Well, he'll be done this year no matter what. I mean, they're going to let him walk if he doesn't. If they don't trade, and that's another funny story. The Okafor thing. Did the game pass him by? Is that what it is? Is he not good enough? I mean, he was. I watched him in college. He was really good in college, and you know, you saw a little bit of moments in the NBA in his rookie year that he could be decent, but you know. Did the game pass him by, or I don't know. The Okafor thing has always been fascinating to me because I just don't know why Philly has given up on him already.
I think the emergence of Embiid has really made him think, we don't need you. I think they kind of, because they didn't know what they had with Embiid, and then once they realized that, well, we've got something incredibly special here,
but
it was kind of like,
nobody
well,
wants yeah. him, though. They put him on the market, no one wants him. I don't get it.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. You put him on the market and nobody wants to pick him up. I don't get that.
Maybe they feel like they can get him for free.
Well, they will next year.
Yeah. What would I say free? I mean, they don't have to give up assets. They'll have to pay for
it. Right, exactly. I mean, Embiid feels like a Spurs-ish player. Like, somebody needs to be rehabbed a little bit and send him to Popovich, and he'll take care of that.
Oh, well.
that's my thing. I look at him, I'm like, you know, send him to San Antonio. Send him to Miami. Maybe they'll make him better.
Could you play him alongside of Whiteside there?
Well, his game fits more of a power forward game anyway. Like, he can still do the, you know, face, you know. I mean, he's more of a post player, but, I mean, yeah, also, that could work, right?
I can't see why not. It's got to work better than what's going on now.
I don't know. but Philly, you know, but the thing about Philly, people talk about you know, Simmons and Embiid, and rightfully so. But their supporting cast is pretty good too, though. I love Robert Covington. Like, Philly was smart yesterday to extend his contract because that guy's a great 3-and-D guy.
His release is so quick.
Yep.
And he elevates too, so you have to contest the hell out of it to really affect it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I love his confidence, man. He just does not stop shooting. He's playing how I thought, at least on the offensive end, how I thought JJ Redick was going to play. He's the guy that's really stretching it because Redick has yet to really emerge in that offense.
He's had moments, but he's not. Yeah,
he hasn't been consistent.
I think Redick's different of leadership more than anything else, the veteran leadership.
Mm. I think so too. It gives him a lot of confidence. But they've got Fultz as well. I mean, Fultz isn't playing well this year. Who knows what he's going to develop into the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got a scary, scary team when you think about it.
Very scary team, and the East is wide open because you look at the teams next to the East. I mean, obviously Boston's doing what they're doing. You know, Cleveland has one more year of LeBron maybe. You know, you have obviously Washington, but, I mean, they're beatable. Toronto is going to get older. Milwaukee's a pretty old other team that's doing something similar to what they're doing in Philadelphia. You know, there is no telling this team's ceiling, barring injury, of course. I mean, You're looking at a guy like Embiid. Look, I'm going to say it right now, and it sounds sacrilegious to say this right now, but Joel Embiid might be the best center in the league right now. We just don't know it yet.
I was thinking about this. I've been thinking about this for a while. I don't know when I'm going to – I may as well say it now. But the center position has suddenly become loaded.
What do you mean? Explain that.
The last few years, you could easily say the center position is the worst position in all of basketball.
Okay.
That's right. Not even close.
I mean, they took it out of the All-Star game, remember? They took it out of the All-Star game. They don't have a center anymore.
Yeah.
Bring him back.
But now you've got guys like Embiid. You've got DeMarcus Cousins, who people I've been talking about. But he's playing very, very well this season.
Whiteside.
Marc Gasol, DeAndre Jordan. These players that we used to think – there used to just be one guy at that position, and there was a complete drop-off. Nobody's even talking about Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard's having a very, very good season
again,
for Charlotte.
You know what it is, though? Because, again, the Dwight Howard narrative is all about biasness.
Sure. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But he only has himself to blame for that too. By the way,
no doubt about it. I mean, we discussed in the last podcast. Like, he's a guy that hurt his own legacy. But at the same time, if you're gonna give nuance and you're gonna give like this, take out all the stuff that happened around it, he's a Hall of Famer. Period. End discussion.
Mm. But my point is, like, as I said, from like 6-7 years ago up until last season, it's been such a thin position in terms of talent. Now you have a lot of talent coming through and really emerging, and you're like, whoa, you know, we got to really reevaluate this. Maybe in 2 years it'll become, as you take out point guards, it may be the second deepest position in the league.
Good point.
It could well become that.
That's a very good point. Again, Philadelphia, man, they're going to be a problem. They're going to be a problem. I think.
How far do you see them going this year? Granted, they stay healthy.
This year, look, if they stay healthy, they're a playoff team. I mean, look, they recovered from an 0-3 start. They're winning games on the road. They're winning. I mean, look, I know it's Lakers and I know it's Clippers, whatever. You still win. You play what you play, and they're winning games. They should be in Sacramento a couple nights ago. That was a little troubling loss to the Kings a couple nights ago, but otherwise. They're a playoff team. They're probably somewhere between 6 and 8 seed. I think you still got Cleveland. We'll figure it out. Boston, you know, all the established teams in the Eastern Conference. But then right after there, I think Philadelphia can probably get the 6th, maybe even the 5th seed if things play out their way.
I'll say that no team will want to face them in the first round.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. And I'll be honest, I'm not a Philly guy. I'm critical of the Philadelphia sports market. But, God, I mean, I I'm personally a Heat fan, obviously, but I'm an NBA fan first, and I'm just glad that I get to watch this team play every night. You know, it's a pleasure to watch this team play. Ben Simmons, man, I tell you, if he gets a relatively decent jump shot or develops a little floater to his game, you know, going to the basket, whew, I'm telling you, that they're going to be a problem for the next 10 years if they keep this team together.
Yeah, he needs to work on his foul shooting too.
Yeah,
that needs to happen.
Yeah, well, so's LeBron.
That's unacceptable.
So's LeBron. I mean, but you know, that's
why does every podcast we do have to be centered around LeBron?
Well, that's not on LeBron, but LeBron. I mean, he is the, you know, I mean, come on now, we know why LeBron. But I'm not going to LeBron just yet though. The Boston Celtics are the hottest team in the league right now. They've won 13 straight games. And they play tonight, actually, as I was recording tonight against the Golden State Warriors.
Big game, yeah.
That's a huge game already. Huge game. Possible finals preview. Let me ask you this. Because right now, and it's only a month, but let's pretend the season ends. Let's pretend the season ended tonight. Is Kyrie Irving MVP? Because I say yes.
No.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's only because Harden's played so well without Chris Paul, and Giannis has played unbelievable.
But you can argue also he's played well without Gordon Hayward. I mean,
yeah, but Gordon Hayward's not Chris Paul.
No, I get. I don't think Chris Paul fits there. I already told you that. I don't think he fits there anyway. But this is me.
Look, we're yet to see. I think he could fit, but we'll see what happens with him. I think those guys will. They'll figure it out because they're Chris Paul's too smart of a player. I'd like to hope in the back of my mind because he's been too good of a player.
Well, how surprised are you? How surprised are you of Boston's start? I mean, Hayward injury happened literally 5 minutes into the season. They start 0-2, right? And then from there, they just take off.
Well, you asked me. You thought they were dead.
I thought they were dead in terms of being sort of beating Cleveland, sort of being like a top two, three team in the East. That's still a playoff team without Hayward. But then I thought maybe they'd be like a 4-5-win team. Now they're on pace to win 70-something games right now.
Right,
and that don't happen, of course. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I see what you say. I'm not overly surprised by it because I thought that there was real potential for Brown and Tatum. I liked them. I saw how they were playing with their aggressiveness, mm-hmm. especially after Hayward's injury. And now, if you would have told me that they would run off 13 straight games without not just Hayward's injury, but also Irving's injury, and Horford's missed a couple of games as well, then I'd be like, nah, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean,
but it has happened. So
it's crazy.
What I'll say, though, is they are maybe the best coach team in all of basketball, and that includes the Spurs. The players know their roles. They come in and they fill those roles regardless of what happened in terms of those injuries.
Are we here now? Are we at that point now where we're saying Brad Stevens is best coach in the NBA? Are we at that point now?
Well, I didn't say that. I said that they are the best coach team. I don't think he is the best coach. So there's a little bit of a difference here. It's almost semantics. What I mean is players understand their roles. I wouldn't say he needs to prove himself a little bit more in the playoffs. But the individuals themselves are more finely tuned than anybody else on any other team. Because even the Spurs, you look at it, I mean, with LaMarcus Aldridge, yeah, he got off to a better start than in previous years. But he hasn't been finely tuned. And there's other players that on the Spurs that have a little bit of question marks, but they haven't reached their potential. Danny Green, for example, very good on the defensive end. But offensively, he's been such a hit or miss player since 2012 finals.
Mm-hmm.
It was the 2012 finals where he went off, right?
Well, 2013. Sorry. How do you say that? 2013?
Yeah, 2013.
I love how you say it.
Sorry, man. It's early in the morning, man.
And, for you, it is. Yeah, 2 a.m.
I know.
I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate it.
But the point I was making, though, is. I wouldn't say Stevens is the best coach in the NBA right now, but the Celtics are the best coached individually, players-wise, because they just come in, they just fill their roles. And those roles, as I say, they have to adapt their roles on the fly because of all the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rozier, who would have even thought about Rozier? Who's their backup center? I can't even think of his name, but he comes in and he blocks shots and he makes an impact.
Is it Baines? Aaron Baines? Or is it,
No. Baines is starting now.
He is starting.
White dude. From Europe. I can't even think of his name. But he comes in and he just fills that role. Morris has come in and played like an all-star.
Yeah, he's playing great.
Not one player is underproducing. And that to me makes me think, well, this team has got something real special.
Can they win the East based on what we've seen this first month? And look, a lot still to come. You know, Cleveland still has Isaiah Thomas coming back in January. We'll see how that goes. But based on what you've seen so far, can they win the East right now, this year? A year ahead of schedule?
Well,
maybe?
Yeah, because when you look at it, you've got to keep in mind that Cleveland's not playing very well right now. And we don't know how well this team will mesh, as you pointed out. So if they don't mesh, then who do they have to worry about? They've got some younger teams coming up, but all of a sudden they're an experienced team because they've been to the conference finals.
I feel like the only team that can give them issues matchup-wise in a series, but I think they'll figure it out, is Milwaukee. I feel like Milwaukee's the only team that can really give them an issue. Like, this is because of the matchup, because they're just long, lengthy, you know, and they have explosive players. But I think Boston's experience could win out there in the end. But I think that's the only other team I can see maybe giving them a little bit of a pushback.
Well, Milwaukee still has to figure out how in that situation, because you got your two best players. You got Irving and you got Giannis.
Right.
I like Boston's chances of slowing down Giannis a lot more than Milwaukee's chances of slowing down Irving, even with the Bledsoe trade.
Right. Which, by the way, that's actually a nice segue. How do you feel so far about that trade? I mean, they played very well since the trade last week. Beat San Antonio, albeit Kawhi. I can't really say that too much. But they looked really good. And it's funny, like, I was watching the game last night against Detroit, who actually ran the whole second best record in Eastern Conference. You know, I look at Bledsoe, he's playing so well. You know, Giannis doesn't have to be Giannis every night. And all of a sudden, Chris Middleton, all of a sudden he's still a pretty good player. His play has picked up now since the Bledsoe trade. So I feel like, I don't know, Milwaukee maybe, like, we talk about Philadelphia being the team on the rise. Milwaukee will also expect to be on the rise too, but Milwaukee might be the most dangerous team, I think, in the Eastern Conference, because we don't know where to put them. They could be a 5 seed, but still find a way, if matchups play out well, they could find themselves playing for the conference championship, depending on things play out with matchups.
I have high expectations for them being the 5th seed.
Yeah,
I think they could easily be a 3rd seed.
I think so too. I just don't know if they're going to do it though, because they have those brain fart games they have once in a while.
Sure, but they'll go through those. When we talk about how Philly is, what their potential is, Milwaukee's a lot further along in the process, dare I say that word, than what Philadelphia is.
Oh, no doubt. No
because
doubt.
Giannis is top 3 player right now, man. Top 2, really. And you talked about if Ben Simmons gets a jump shot. That's all that's missing from Giannis's game is that consistent jumper. He's gotten a lot better with it, but the rest of his game is right there.
It's a very slow jump shot, more than anything.
It is.
That's something that is.
But teams have to back off him anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. But I don't know.
But here's a question that I'll throw back at you, though.
Okay.
How good will this team be once Parker returns?
Well, he can be a hindrance, too, also, because I mean, he may demand the ball a little more. I mean, I don't know.
Will he come off the bench, considering all the firepower that they've got, especially with Bledsoe?
You have to consider it. I mean, the thing with Parker is that this is now a large sample size of a player who just can't stay on the court. So right. I think the safe bet is that he will come on the bench.
And if he is willing to come off the bench, then all of a sudden, does that give them the depth required?
If Jason Kidd could sell him and come off the bench, you don't have firepower in the starting lineup. With Middleton and Bledsoe and Giannis, of course, you know, and even Tony Snell's playing well, you know, and then you throw in Park off the bench with some of those guys. I mean, yeah, I mean that can work, and that's ultimately the name of the game is how much bodies do you have, you know, to compete in, you know, in the playoffs. And I think if Parker accepts that role at least for this year, you know, obviously you evaluate that moving forward. I think Milwaukee is the most dangerous team in the conference because you don't know what to expect.
I think that if they're firing on all cylinders, if they not only do you not know what they expect, but you could easily make the argument that they're the most talented team.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're the most talented team, it doesn't matter how good Isaiah Thomas is. It doesn't matter how good they could still knock off Cleveland.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Because I think this is going to be the first time we'll see a LeBron-led team where he has to do way more than he's supposed to. The problem is now he's 33 years old, not 27. You know what I'm saying? And it's a lot of miles on those tires.
He's nearly 34, by the way.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't say old 34, but he's played a lot of basketball, extra basketball, in the last 7 years, you know, not including the Olympics. And that's not even including the Olympics, you know, at one point. So, this is the year. If there's a year for Cleveland to be vulnerable, this is the year. Because I think the Kyrie trade, man, I think the Kyrie move hurts Cleveland a lot. Because if for anything, we know Kyrie, when LeBron didn't play, you know, then the Cavs went, 1-11 or 0-11 without LeBron. When Kyrie was there, but I think Kyrie was a great, you know, safe space, I guess you want to call it, or something for that team. Like, it was good to have the other guy that can go off for a little while LeBron gets his, you know, gets his rest, whatever. I think they lose that. And unless Isaiah Thomas can replicate at least three quarters of that, I see problems across the board. And this, look, the Cavs just look old, man. They look old.
Not only do they look old, they look dysfunctional. Usually when you have an older team, it indicates they're veterans. And this team is full of veterans too, but they don't seem to have any proper leadership. And this does fall on the shoulders of LeBron. Also other guys too, like Love and Wade and the other players. But there's no excuse for them to have that kind of lack of leadership or lack of direction on the court.
I mean,
I don't want to hear about Tyronn Lue.
Right,
Tyronn Lue is the coach. I get that, but the players at that, like, we're not talking about a team like Philly or Milwaukee or even Miami, where you've got younger players developing. These are veterans; they should know what to do out there. And they just bleed so many points. Unless if LeBron goes for 57, unless if they put up 130 points,
you can't expect that. Look, it was for Kyle Korver against the Knicks some nights ago. I mean, this team's in disarray. I mean, still. I mean, it's. The only reason why I hold out hope for the Cavs is because they still have an all-star type player coming back to their team in a few months. Okay, but that being said, I just don't know if that's enough. Like, this is not like one of those things where, like, you just turn it on, turn it off, because LeBron's already turning it on, and they're eking out wins despite him turning it on to 50 points a game. No, I think this is a real issue. I think if it's any year for LeBron to get caught, this is the year.
Well, not just I do get what you're saying, like, in terms of the potential for Isaiah Thomas and his skill set and what value he can bring to the team. But also keep in mind, we've got no idea. Like, LeBron, you need to have a very specific game to play alongside LeBron James. And there's a lot of great players. You would know this, being a Miami Heat aficionado that you are, that have struggled, whether it's Chris Bosh or even Dwayne Wade, playing alongside him and reaching their potential, or in terms of, at least from a production standpoint. And we don't know, one, how healthy Isaiah will be or how effective he'll be from an athletic standpoint, and two, how well his game will mesh alongside LeBron. And if they're pinning all their hopes on Isaiah Thomas, that's such a thing. There's no reason. When you look at their talent, there's no reason they should be a sub 500 team. Absolutely no reason. And yet they still find themselves in that predicament. That makes me think that they're still incredibly dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And one guy who we've yet to see ever play alongside LeBron is not going to be the answer, probably, to their problems.
You're probably right. What do you make of the whole LeBron against New York back and forth with, you know, him trolling the Knicks and trolling Phil Jackson, who's not even there anymore, and, you know, didn't have that huge game and huge fourth quarter against the Knicks on a couple nights ago, and then the Instagram posts. It's petty as hell, but it's fun. I'm sorry. It's petty, very petty. And I know, maybe this is the LeBron we always should have had from the beginning, because we always thought LeBron was very unauthentic. So maybe this is who he is.
And that's a good point. He was always criticized for
not people, being, you know.
Yeah. He was kind of like I hate to say this, but you're a wrestling nut. He kind of reminded me of John Cena. Everyone was bullying him every now he was a face.
Let me be clear, Matthew. Let me be clear. I am an old school wrestling nut.
Right.
Not present day.
That's kind of old school. Like, not the current Cena. I'm talking about the Cena that, you know, people used to boo the hell out of. Like, when he was going up against The Rock, I mean, that was 5-6 years ago anyway.
Yeah, I didn't watch that. I wasn't a fan of wrestling at that point. I stopped, like, 2002. Oh,
well, you missed out. That was probably the last great real feud in wrestling.
Yeah, I'm old, man. I'm a Hulk Hogan macho man guy.
Oh, okay, then. that's an entire episode all in itself. Getting back to LeBron, you're right, it's childish, it's petty. It does create a little bit of excitement, but at the same time, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, why would someone this great, who, you know, we're talking top five all-time talent, you know, a lot of people regard him as still the best player in basketball, why would he concern himself with the Knicks? You know, why lower himself? I would love to see him pull this kind of BS against Boston or the Warriors or the Rockets. You know, he doesn't do that stuff. Why the Knicks? It's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of demeaning for his own status and his own. You know, if you see like the best player on the court, why is he going? Why is he only? You know, why does he only have this false bravado against teams that are so beneath him? Why?
I feel a lot of it, and maybe it's just me being a little bit of a giving LeBron a pass because he's earned the right to have a little bit more leash because of what he's done especially the last 7 years. I think he's bored. I just think he's bored. I think it was, get me to April. Just get
what?
Me to April.
Okay.
Is that too much? Is that too much?
Wait. He has lost three of the last four finals.
Okay, against an all-time great franchise, great team.
Oh, come on. If they're all-time greats, right, shouldn't his interest be taping David? Now, had he won the last three of the four finals, I'd say, yeah, sure, he's probably, like, you know, he's running out of things. But he's got something to go after. Why would he be bored at this stage if he keeps losing to those quote unquote great teams? I don't buy the boredom thing. There's no reason for him to be bored.
He's being great because look, nothing he does between October and April matters to anybody anymore. Like if he wins his fifth MVP, it's like okay, well, whatever. We expect that from him to do that. No one's impressed anymore. If he wins the Eastern Conference, well, we expect that because he wins the East. Unless if he's Golden State or wins the championship, that's all that matters at this point. So maybe he's just bored. I mean, every season from this point of LeBron James as the best player in basketball hinges on really 2 weeks of the year, not the other 30-something weeks of the season. Fair on fair. That's just how it is.
Well, yeah, but he's got enough, like, they're not good enough to just flip the switch. This is not the 2001 Lakers.
That I agree with. No, Matthew, that I agree with, 100%. And that's why I'm concerned because, you know, other Cavs teams and Heat teams, you can say, okay, well, because they're young enough, of course, and they can do that. This team, not so fast, no. I mean, again, when Kyle Korver is winning you games, that's not good.
But the thing is that they've got – they're developing such bad habits now. And as I said, they can't just instantly flip that switch. They cannot just they're not a Golden State. They're not the Lakers of 2001. They're not that team that can just coast through the regular season and then come playoff time just turn it on. They just can't do that. They don't have the firepower. They need to fix their bad habits because these bad habits aren't just from this season.
Of course.
Think back to last season. And I don't care if they made the finals. The East last year was pretty bad, as was the West, right?
So
if we're going to
so
be fair.
So was the playoffs, though. The playoffs are bad. Yeah. Remember last year compared to the playoffs, like how bad it was?
Yeah, of course I remember.
We did a podcast on that, remember?
Yeah. I did lots of podcasts on this.
Yeah.
The fact remains, the last 50 games of last season, they had the exact same problems that they have now.
But again,
they're not playing defense.
But that's where Kyrie, I think, was able to mask some of that. Having a Kyrie can mask some of those problems because, again, you had a dynamic player like him there. They don't have that no more.
No, you're 100% right. Kevin Love's by far and away the second best player, and he's always inconsistent, and he's relying on others to get him. His most consistent offensive move now is offensive rebounding.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And sorry, go.
No. I'll ask another question, but go ahead.
Yeah. So we're getting back to whether LeBron's bored or not. He's only bored or not if he's not competitive. If he's competitive, let me ask you this: was Michael Jordan bored when he was getting drilled by the Detroit Pistons?
Well, at that time, Michael Jordan was still ringless, so he was still shooting something. But once you
isn't LeBron titles, shooting for Jordan's throne?
I don't think so anymore. I think that's past. I think LeBron has accepted the fact that no matter what, LeBron James could win six rings before his career's over, and people will say, "Oh, well, Jordan's 6-0, Jordan's 6-0, LeBron's 6-5." Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think LeBron has finally got to the point where he's comfortable who he is. This is why he's lashing out on the Knicks. Because this is who he is.
Why is it the Knicks' fault?
Well, I mean, whatever. But, I mean, he's finally got to the point where, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to do what I do. That's it. I mean, what you said in the first place, just be authentic. That's why I love Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Authentic.
Sorry, go.
Let me ask you. The Pistons, you know, surprising. They lost last night, but they're 10-4 right now. Second best record in the conference. They're another team I enjoy watching, too. They got some really good players there, I think. Fun to watch, actually, to be honest with you. Are they for real? Could they sustain this? I say yes. The Pistons.
I'm glad you brought up the Pistons, because I totally forgot about Drummond when I was listing the good centers in the league.
Yeah.
They got off to a start similar to this a few years ago, and then they fizzled out, and they ended up being just the 8th seed.
Yeah.
But I kind of like their toughness. They don't seem rattled. They seem seem a lot better in the fourth quarters now than what they did a few seasons ago.
Right.
I think they won't maintain this record. I don't think they'll stay at the top of the conference, but I think they could easily finish as a 6th seed, something like that. And so, how about Drummond from the foul line? Have we ever seen a player go from being this bad at the foul line for their entire career and then just turn it on, so to speak? You know, I'm not sure if he finally started practicing or whatever, but he's a very consistent foul shooter now from that position.
Weird, right? Isn't it weird to see Andre Drummond hitting free throws regularly? And
yeah.
I'll tell you, the big X factor for this team has been Tobias Harris. Like, you can argue right now he could be an all-star this year. And we're finally seeing the guy that we thought. There's no argument
when you look at their record.
Yeah.
Their record, and he's been their best player, at least on the offensive end.
And you can see, you're finally seeing the guy that we thought we could have saw in Orlando. You know what I'm saying? That all of a sudden we're seeing Tobias Harris, and I'm like, whoa, okay. And I'm not the biggest Reggie Jackson fan in the world. I've been very critical of the guy. But he's actually calmed down a little bit this year. He's actually playing within the system. And I think Stan Van Gundy finally has put together the team he's been trying to put together for the last three or four seasons now. Kind of like Orlando 2.0 with Dwight.
I wouldn't go that far, but it's built in the same way.
Yeah.
I will agree with you there.
Yeah, they're interesting to watch. I don't know if they'll be a top four seed in the East. I doubt it. But I think they're interesting. I think they are a playoff team, and this could be somewhat sustained. I think the East is on the way back, man. I think we talk about the West, and obviously you have Golden State and Houston and whatnot. But I think the East is on the way back finally.
Well, just look at this podcast. We spent, what is it, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and we haven't even talked in depth about one Western Conference team.
No, we haven't at all. And the funny thing is the most interesting team in the West right now is actually the Lakers. That's it, in my opinion, anyway.
Oh, no. Don't say that.
Well, I'm intrigued by not just Lonzo, but by Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, okay. And who's their other rookie? Kuzma?
Kuzma.
He's been interesting.
Yeah.
They're hanging around too, man.
And they're hanging around. They're hanging around right now. They're 6-9. I mean, they're hanging around. They're not playing. They're competitive.
I have a question for you. How long will it be before the Lakers admit they made a mistake in trading Russell?
They're not going to admit that. At least until next year. If they don't get a big whale next year, then maybe that's when we know it wasn't worth it. If they get LeBron next year, for example, and Paul George, I'm just throwing out hypotheticals. If they get those guys next year, it was worth it because they need that cap room. Because they have to pay Russell at some point anyway. So use that money on LeBron /another whale. So only if they strike out on the big whales next year.
Maybe, but look, they could have. Right now, who would you prefer on your if you're the Lakers?
Mm-hmm.
Would you prefer Paul George or Russell right now from this season?
For the next couple of years, is 1 year.
Next couple of years, because we're talking like a contract. The Paul George would not sign for 1 year.
Would the understanding that Paul George will stay and sign a new deal, or that's still in the year? Paul George, by far.
Over Russell?
Over Russell? Season? Yeah.
From what we've seen this season from Russell,
yeah, but a lot of the Russell problems wasn't just on the court, it was off the court. It was maturity issues.
You gotta get that at that age. Surely that's expected at some. Like
I don't see Lonzo act that way on off the court. I don't see him doing the stuff he's doing off the court. I don't see guys like him. I don't see Karl-Anthony Towns doing that. I didn't see Anthony Davis do that. Again, I mean, he's a top two pick in the draft. Act like one.
Well, what are you referring to, the Snapchat thing?
Well, that and other things too. There's other things I've also heard about too, and I've heard from people I'm close to, like close to the team, that they've told me about the kid.
Okay, well, I think the whole Snapchat thing was a bit overblown.
No, it was, but the actual incident was overblown. Yes, but it was the overall narrative of what he did, and what, you know, trust in the locker room and all that. It spoke of a larger problem with him.
But he wasn't the one cheating on his fiancée. So why is that his problem?
I'm not playing morality play here. You're not wrong what you're saying there. But in terms of team building and trust in locker room, it was a very good, bad look for him. That's all I'm going to say. Now, whether that... Look, I can't stand Nick Young, so I'm not even defending the guy. Okay? Nick Young's a moron. Okay? But... in terms of what Russell did, you know, the maturity and the trust you're building with teammates, you see that as a teammate, you're thinking, can I trust this guy? I mean, this guy's a top pick in the draft. He's supposed to be the face of our franchise. And I don't know if I can trust the guy. It's bad optics more than anything else.
Well,
No one's denying how talented he is, though. He's a very talented kid.
Yeah, but... I'm not sure if I'd lose trust of it. His phone was hacked after he sent out private snaps. It's not like he posted onto the public one.
No. Again, I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just the optics. And I say I've heard other things too, that when I see this big thing happen, it's like, oh, yeah, it makes sense. Okay, I understand why. You know. So, but talent wise, he's a very talented kid. I mean, I'm happy he's out of that market. I want to see stars grow in other markets and see if the Nets can actually, you know, build back something that they purposely, you know, stupidly
You're talking about the tanking era. They take it to a new level because they tank for another team.
I'm actually reading the book right now by Greg Hrenya, who will be on his podcast soon, actually, about the Nets and their five-year plan. Oh my God! What's
the name of this book? I want to check this out.
Let me tell you right now. It's on my book list here, but. It's the 5-year plan, I think it's called. It's by Greg Hrenya, who he'll be on this podcast soon, though.
I'll scope it out.
We became good friends, actually, this summer. So,
I'll definitely check that out. But the thing that I wanted to say about Russell is you look at how well he's playing this season out in for the Nets, and I can't help but think in the back of my mind how good the Lakers would be, how competitive they would be this season. I don't care about the next couple of years if they were able to get LeBron or Paul George or both. But this season alone, with KCP and Randall and Ingram and all these other guys, the talent they have, if they had Russell on that team as well, they would absolutely be challenging for a playoff spot.
I'm not sure I agree with that, to be honest with you, because D'Angelo Russell, you have to think, well, if you're saying that D'Angelo Russell is at this point a little more mature and self-aware to get guys involved, I'm not sure he's that guy still.
But he's doing that out there in Brooklyn.
Lonzo Ball, you know, I mean, it's not like you're not a big Lonzo guy, are you?
I don't, look, I'm not an anti-Lonzo Ball guy. I just don't think he's worth trading a guy like Russell just to clear the room for him because we don't know how good he's going to be. He may fizzle out. Like, how many number two picks in the draft, Russell is one of them, have we seen just turn into nothing?
Michael Beasley?
A perfect example of that. That's a perfect example. That's a great example.
He's still in the league, though. He's still in the league.
You wouldn't build a team around him, but they were already building a team around Lonzo Ball without him even playing a minute in the game.
But
in the league.
I think because his skill set, too, also, he's a facilitator. And I think because of that, they want to build around a guy like Magic or Jason Kidd. And to me, if you took away all the LeVar dad stuff out the equation, we're not judging Lonzo Ball the way we are now. I truly believe that people are evaluating Lonzo Ball based on what his dad has been doing for the last year, hyping him up.
Well, I haven't even mentioned his dad, but I'm just talking about like that they're building around him already, or they prior to the season starting, they were building around him. And we haven't even seen how effective his game is in the NBA.
I will say this about Lonzo Ball, though. With everything that's happened with that Ball family and being a Laker and everything around that, he's his demeanor is really, really good. I like his demeanor is good because you got to be calm and kind of sort of like self-aware playing point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think right now he shows that he's mature enough to handle, you know, the pressure right now. And look, I don't agree with all his choices. He thinks that Drake is the greatest rapper of all time or Migos and whatever. And I think he's an idiot for saying that. But in terms of, you know, on the court and, you know, and just his demeanor, I think his demeanor is just right. And I think as you get to year two, year three, you'll start seeing the development. I'm not ready to jump off the Ball bandwagon. In fact, I see a lot of good there to suggest that, okay, yeah, there's a bad moment here and a good moment here. But I think a lot of people are using the dad and what he has created here and use that as to influence their thoughts on Lonzo Ball, that he should be, flash, you know, out the gate, great. No, some guys take a little while and then they become great. Jason Kidd was a perfect example. Jason Kidd wasn't you know, I mean, he was co-rookie of the year, but he wasn't, you know, out the gate, you know, oh my God, no.
Well, yeah, but Jason Kidd was also, you know, playing a lot more effective on the offensive end, not shooting-wise, but at least from...
He's a horrible shooter.
He was a horrible shooter. But
you can develop that, though.
Jacking him up. That's the difference. The percentages are similar, but at the same time, Kidd knew that, okay, I can't make this shot. I'm just going to drive.
Well, let's just say this. If Andre Drummond can become a better free-throw shooter, Lonzo Ball can become a better three-point shooter, too.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'd agree with that.
What I
like about Lonzo Ball is his ability to actually protect the rim. That's very underrated. He's a very good shot blocker for his size.
Yeah.
He does have that going for him. Apart from that, and this has absolutely nothing to his father. I try to avoid any. If I see a clip of him of his father, I don't watch it.
His dad's funny. He's non-threatening. He's just annoying. That's all.
Yeah, but he's putting a lot of pressure on his kid that he doesn't need to. His kid's already made a name for himself, or like from a marketing standpoint.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't need other guys going at him all the time. But in terms of his game is so deeply flawed right now. And whether that gets filled out or not, of course, there's potential for that. But it's such a big risk to, as I said, start molding a team around a player who is so flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was saying, like, at what point do they admit trading Russell for essentially cap space, future cap space? Do they admit that was a bad decision? Because Russell's incredible.
The only way I'll say it again, the only way we'll know that, and they'll never confess this, of course, but the only way we as fans and media will actually understand that topic is if they strike out on a big whale this coming summer. If they get a Paul George or they get a LeBron James, then it was worth it because they get the cap space. Because the idea was the cap space, and they're gonna try to move Randall also too, Julius Randall. That's not the move because they want to clear cap space because they got to pay him $18+ million next year, and I don't think they want to do that.
Well. With Randall, I can understand that trade. I'm a huge Julius Randall fan.
Oh, me too.
But I can understand that because there is a massive logjam at that position with Ingram and now they've obviously Kuzma and they've got Larry Nance Jr. They've got quite a few players that really play the role that Randall plays.
They're building around Ball, Randall, and I guess now Kuzma. Those are the only three guys that are not
Ingram. Don't forget Ingram.
Yeah, and he's playing better too. By the way, Ingram.
Yeah, he's going to – I like his game. Now, if they want to build around Ingram instead of Lonzo Ball at this stage, I'd be happy for that because I see a lot more consistent play out of Ingram than I do out of Ball.
But again, Ingram's this is, what, second year, right? So let's give them time. Yeah. Ingram first year was like –
Yeah, I'm not saying trade Lonzo Ball or anything like that, but I'm saying don't build around him just yet. Let's just wait and see what you've got before you make that trade.
Right. When's the next podcast?
Oh, for my one, or when am I going to appear in yours?
Yours. I'll get you when I get you. Trust me. I'm sure you'll come on. Yeah. When is your next podcast, though? Because I'm really enjoying it.
A couple of days. I'm not sure. Probably tomorrow. I've got too many questions building up. So it's funny now because I encourage people to send me questions and things of that nature. Now, and I used to try to balance it, the topics that I wanted to talk about and the questions. Now I can just go through the questions like, oh, yeah, I'd like to talk about that. So probably tomorrow. I'll probably do one tomorrow.
I'm enjoying the show, man. It's a good show.
When are you going to come on my podcast? That's a better question.
That's my next question. When am I'm down. We're going to schedule, of course. We're 14 hours apart, so we have to figure that out.
Let's do it, man, because I've got a lot of historical questions that I'd like to run by
you. Let me ask you this, because let me see. 3 a.m. here is what? 5 p.m. you?
Oh, 3 a.m.
here.
No, it's 7 p.m.
Okay, so that's still decent, I guess, right?
Well, are you up at 3 a.m.?
Sometimes. Sometimes I am. Okay, well, if you want to do it, then there are nights I work till 3 a.m., so, you know, so... Yeah, I can.
We'll work it out. Yeah. We'll figure it out. And as I said, there's a lot of hypothetical NBA questions, like what if Kobe stayed in Charlotte, or what if the Lakers never picked up Shaq, but they picked up Kobe still.
So you know, one time, my goal is to start doing mailbag episodes, basically like same thing, questions. Do like a whole show, just mailbag questions. You know, send me questions and I'll answer it on the show. You know, mailbag questions. I mean, I should.
Okay,
do that.
I'll pass on some of the questions that I get. We'll see how you handle.
Matt,
we'll see how you go when people ask you why the NBA is rigged or
it's not rigged. Some of those questions. It's not rigged. It's not rigged, but I'll tell you, the optics are bad.
I'll sum up because this is I did an entire episode on this. I'll sum
I know
up.
You did.
Yeah, I think the league. Does try to the league makes it very clear that they want certain teams to win, and this is why you were saying before, like Adam Silver's, you know, doing a good job and all that. I don't think he is. I don't think he's doing a better job than what David Stern did.
Yeah, you've been very critical of Adam Silver lately. It's like the fourth time in this podcast.
Not lately, always. Yeah. I've always been critical of the one good thing he did was the Donald Sterling.
Right.
That was the one situation that he's handled well. I can't think of any other situation he's handled well. He's it's almost better if you're judging it to it's more excusable when you're comparing David Stern to Adam Silver when you say, well, David Stern didn't even admit there was a problem. It's more inexcusable that Adam Silver will get up and say, yeah, we have an issue, but then do absolutely nothing about it when it comes to officiating.
True. Right.
Because that's a slap in the face. It's such a the league. And this is what I said in that podcast about whether the league is rigged or not, is for them to get up and use such vague terminology like, oh, an unnatural basketball act.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell is that? That they start kicking out everyone that flops in. Okay, that's now the standard. But for them to have that kind of vague thing and they don't address it, the league has not – this is a problem that's at some point – I'm becoming more and more convinced, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I wish this wasn't the situation. I hate the fact that the league has got this cloud hanging over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, it's going to hit the fan the same way that it hit the fan with steroids and baseball. And then they've got to have a much, much bigger mess on their hands.
Hmm. Well, we'll see.
All the signs are there.
Well, we'll see how things play out, though. But I'll still say to what we said earlier in the show: the NBA right now, and at least the optics of the future, they're in a pretty good place. I will say that.
Oh, I agree with you there. But they need to fix this, man. They need to fix it. They can't have guys getting thrown out like Carmelo got thrown out the other night.
That was a garbage call. That was me. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Sorry?
No. I was going to end the show now, but go ahead and say what you want to say before you end it.
Oh, yeah. The thing about the Melo call is they actually sat down, or they didn't sit down, but they went to the monitors and they talked about it for a good 3 or 4 minutes before throwing him out.
Ridiculous. That's the worst part. You have the video to make the decision and you still, I'll still fuck up. I'll still fuck up.
Yeah, but, okay. Yeah, look, I get that. But if you got like 3 or 4 people standing around who are meant to be at the top of their profession. Mm-hmm. making a call like that, and they have video evidence to refer to, how do they make that all three or four of them come to the same messed up conclusion?
These
are rhetorical questions, by the way. I'm not asking you to answer it.
That's maybe something the next time on this podcast we'll discuss that, probably. Okay, sure. But anyway, I know you're not on Twitter much anymore, but I'm going to still say on Twitter, Malfunction Matt. Of course, he is the host of the I Still Love This Game podcast, which you can see on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio. By the way, to listen to your show, I have to download it, not stream it. So that's why that's how I'm able to listen to it now. I have to download it.
Still? You still have to download it? You still have an issue?
That's not a big deal. That's not a big deal. I'll just listen to it and then delete after. No big deal.
Okay.
So no big deal.
Well, whatever works for you, because it streams for everybody else. So. Yeah,
it might be just a country thing. I don't know. Maybe because of where you're at. Because there's a couple of shows, actually. There's actually two more shows from Australia I do listen to also that I have a problem streaming.
Wait, you listen to other shows from Australia? I don't know how to feel about this, man.
What, are you jealous?
A little.
It's not basketball shows. It's for the record.
That hurts a bit, man.
Shut up. One's a Michael Jackson podcast, and another one is an NBA podcast, actually, I think about it. But I've known him for a long time. But yours get more play than anybody else, so you're fine.
I'm still upset by this. No, I'm just kidding.
You'll get over it. Matthew Damien, you'll get over it, man. Again, on Twitter, even though he hates Twitter, Malfunction Matt, check out the podcast. Seriously,
Facebook, podcast. Instagram, I still love this game. That's where you'll find me.
He records twice a week, of course. Yeah, that's it. So we'll have you on the show again soon. Every couple of weeks, we'll come on the show, man. I like this. Also, we get a little groovier now. You're on the show every couple of weeks now. Don't you like this?
I don't like waking up at 2 a.m.
We will figure something else out. Seriously, because
I'm just complaining. No, I do enjoy it because
the only time I can really record all the time is like 10 a.m. in the morning here because I have the house myself. So
no, in all fairness, though, these don't even feel like podcasts. This just feels like a conversation I have before playing pickup basketball.
And that's the point of the show to begin with, is to have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
All right. So all right, man. Great job.
Thank you. You too.